up next is a special edition of Sound Ideas, an Illinois Issues Forum here on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org. You can personalize the NPR One app. Learn more at WGLT.org/NPR1. With a few clicks, teach it what you like and what you don't. And if you hear GLT or NPR news you like but want to hear later, you can save it. Get NPR and GLT news and podcasts all in one place. And download and try the free NPR One app. Learn more at WGLT.org/NPR1.
Welcome to our NPR Illinois Forum Series, Election 2018, Seeking Solutions. The series produced by NPR Illinois, supported by AARP. I'm Sean Crawford, NPR Illinois' news director. I'm host of a show and a podcast called State Week, where we focus on state government. Tonight's program is in partnership with WNIJ, and we are in Rockford at the Northern Illinois University Rockford campus. We're glad you could come out tonight, and also welcome to those who are listening on the air and through social media. We're traveling across Illinois this year to hear how voters like yourselves feel about the various issues that are facing the state. And tonight we're focused on the state's health fiscally, but also the local and state economy. Is enough being done to prepare the workforce for the new economic realities? What about attracting and keeping businesses right here? We look forward to hearing from you tonight. We've asked you to submit questions or comments, and if we call on you, we'd like for you to step to the microphone and please ask your question or make your comment. We have a great panel tonight that will help guide our discussion, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves, and we will start right here next to me.
Good evening. I am Lisa Bly, the Executive Director of the Local Workforce Board, which is the Workforce Connection, and responsible for serving Boone, Winnebago, and Stevenson County. We look to discover what the workforce issues are and come up with solutions that actually address those. So we work with individuals and employers to address those issues.
My name is Rena Kachonis. I am Associate Vice President. I'm sorry? Okay. Rena Kachonis, Associate VP for Outreach Engagement and Regional Development. So welcome to Northern Illinois University. We're pleased to be part of this presentation this evening. My role is to help bring the resources and expertise of the university into the region to match that with the resources and expertise that are in the region to help try and address problems and maximize opportunities. So I hope we'll have a chance to talk about a few examples of that as we go on this evening.
Thank you, Sean. Good evening. I'm Brian Harger. I'm a research associate with the NIU Center for Governmental Studies. I've been with the center for about 20 years. Prior to that, I worked for about 10 years in the local and regional economic development groups. So economic development is my background. I've done considerable research since I came to the center on a lot of the topics surrounding economic development in Illinois, particularly in terms of demographics and how the workforce and how those all play into the economic growth of the state.
So again, we would like this to be a two-way conversation tonight, so we do want to hear from you. Just fill out your card, submit it, and somebody will pick that up, and we will call on you if you have a question or comment. But I'm going to start with our panel again here. I'd like for each of you, and you can just go down the line here, to talk just a moment about what you see with the local economy. Are things going well? What do you think needs to change, if anything, and what are some things that might be working in this area?
So I'll start with the unemployment rate. I think when the unemployment rate is low, there are a couple of things that come with that. There's one thing to say that most people are working, but the other side of the equation is that employers are hard-pressed to find talent that have the skills that they need. So that's one of the conversations we have on an ongoing basis. It's more so about employers not being able to fill the positions, and that happens for a number of reasons. There are a number of factors. When unemployment is low, individuals have an opportunity to job hop. So sometimes they want to move from one place to the other. And then the other challenge is sometimes employers don't have the resources to be able to train individuals for the higher skill jobs they have open, so then those jobs remain open. And so that's a challenge that I tend to see on a regular basis.
It certainly is a positive to say that we have low unemployment, and that's something that we can be happy about, as Lisa has mentioned. What is the untold story there? Are people out of the search for jobs? Here in the Rockford area, you know, we can be very optimistic, but I think we have to be very strategic. How do we reach the people who don't have the technical background, the education that they need? NIU has been involved with a statewide effort called Illinois 60 by 2025, and this is all about ensuring that adults in the state of Illinois have a credential of some sort. 60% of people in Illinois having at least some level of credential that qualifies them for a job by 2025. And so that is an effort that has a lot of different partnerships, collaborations with K through 12 systems, community colleges, workforce connection types of organizations, economic development organizations. Here in the Rockford area, we are very privileged to have a high level of technical expertise, engineering expertise. You know, we have these big anchors with UTC Aerospace, Woodward. We actually have in the Rockford area 1.5 times the national average of engineers per capita. So at one level, we've got lots of engineering expertise, but there is a challenge there in that the workforce pipeline for that level of engineering experience isn't what we need it to be. So we can talk a little bit later about a collaborative workforce development solution that we've come up with at NIU with partners at Rock Valley College and industry partners to try and meet that workforce demand. The other thing I'd like to mention is that I really see an opportunity for us to focus in our region on innovation. And you're here at NIU Rockford. In this building, we have NIU IgerLab. IgerLab has been in existence in the Rockford area for over 10 years, so you may be familiar with it. It is a business incubator accelerator. We have lots of services, product development services, prototyping, helping innovators and entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs to build their own businesses. So at NIU, we want our students to think like entrepreneurs, even if they're going into companies, but we also want to provide resources for people who aren't necessarily part of the traditional workforce, but would like to kind of strike out on their own so they can build businesses and create jobs and create wealth in the area.
Well, I have to say that I based my evaluation a lot on how things were when I came here in the beginning of 1994. And there are some similarities to today. I mean, I came here in 1994. The area had been through a very difficult period of recession, a lot of people leaving town, a lot of other issues coming up. The past recession was pretty hard on us. It's taken a while to come back, but I would say the community, the region today is in a much stronger position to deal with the problems it has than it was 25 years ago. I think we have a lot better institutional capacity to deal with some of the issues we have now, like changing demographics, some loss of the working age population, and also some decline in labor force participation, and then the big issue of how to replace a generation of workers that are now retiring and moving out of the labor force. But again, I think we now have resources, and I think a better attitude and more cooperation here, and we're in a much stronger position to deal with those matters now.
Brian, let me stay with you on this question because you touched on it slightly. There was people dropping out of the workforce. They're not mm-hmm. looking for work as much either. Sometimes when you have that low unemployment rate, it's a little misleading. And it is. It misleading here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the labor force participation, and this is not a local problem. This is something that's been going on nationwide. Labor force participation in this country peaked in the late 90s and has been going down since then. It took a big drop following the last recession and has really yet to recover. Some of that is probably age-related because our population is aging. Our birth rates are down, so that does have an impact. I've been reading now that someone's estimating that we're 10,000 baby boomers are leaving the workforce every day. That trend is probably going to continue for at least another decade. So that does present a challenge to it. Now, the other side of it, there are other reasons, I'm sure. Some people have cited the opioid crisis. Others have just have speculated about why people leave workforce and don't come back. Part of that unemployment rate drop has been the fact that there hasn't been much growth in the labor force itself. And in some cases, a lot of the rural parts of the state has actually gone down since the end of the recession.
And Dr. Blight, would you like to weigh in on that?
Yes, I wanted to speak to the labor force participation because I think there are some other factors to consider. You mentioned the pipeline, and so I'll speak to while we might have opportunities for highly skilled and technical positions, I think the backfill becomes the problem in terms of building the pipeline. Oftentimes, when you're talking about entry-level positions or mid-level positions, sometimes the wages may not be at a level that encourages someone to want to pursue that job. So that's one of the reasons they may opt out. The other is the transportation, where the jobs are. So if it's hard for someone to get to that job, then it makes it difficult for them to actually obtain the job and keep the job. And so that's another challenge that I think and a reason why people drop out of the labor force. But I just wanted to point out the wages and the transportation, I think, are some other factors because there are some situations where people may choose, they have to look at their benefits and decide mm-hmm. whether or not going to that job, getting there, outweighs the option. So where the jobs are located comes into play as well. In addition to, do we have a transportation system that can get people to where the jobs actually are?
And I believe it's 5%. I think I saw the number today that came out. 5% is the unemployment rate for Rockford.
Correct.
And I know I have seen that number much higher for the
right.
Rockford area in,
right.
in years past.
Yes.
Let me ask, and any of you that want to respond to this, we talked about the idea of the unemployment rate. Maybe that's a little misleading there. There's also the factor that people are working, but the idea of being underemployed. And again, that's starting to show up a lot across the country. I'm assuming it's the same thing here.
That's correct. So, and people are trying to work two and three jobs. And so sometimes we find that's the dilemma with training because people are looking for immediate gratification. So I need to work and I can't take off work to go for training. And so that's why one of the things we've done a lot of work with employers on is an earn and learn model so that as you're earning wages, you're learning the skills. So you may come in with an entry level position and you work with that employer. And as you gain those competencies, then you get more compensation for it. So then you don't have to choose between whether I take a temporary job and then that's not going anywhere, but I need it and I can't take the time off to do training. So that's one of the things that we've done a lot of work with employers so that individuals don't have to choose one over the other.
And feel free if you want to, anybody else want to weigh in on that that issue of underemployment?
Yeah, I think that certainly does feed into some of that. It's one of those issues that's a little bit difficult to quantify. The government really doesn't issue very good statistics on that or collect them. But, you know, in talking to employers, those things start to come out, especially the skill mismatch issue. And it's probably more of a problem when we get out into some of the rural areas because there's not really a lot of slack in the labor market in the sense that if your skills, your credentials, your career ambitions don't match the jobs available, you only have a couple of choices. Basically, you conform yourself to what's available and probably be underemployed, or you leave the area, or you drop out of the workforce. Maybe a small number of cases, you might be lucky enough to start your own business or get a position where you can work remotely. But that's normally how it goes out there. Many of these rural counties, I wouldn't say that the economy is really humming, yet the unemployment rates are very low. And that's because, by and large, most of the people who can't find employment are picking up and leaving, which shows up in the population loss figures. And that's that probably one of the biggest concerns of declining population is that most of those people tend to be working age. And also the other side of it is, you know, the under 20s, the children and so forth. Those are dependents of households that move out. So it's kind of making it difficult, presenting a difficult situation for the future of trying to fill the jobs that do exist in some of those areas.
Well, I know that, and I believe we all are aware that the workplace, the workforce has changed a lot through the years and what's needed. And there are jobs that just aren't there anymore. One of the big key losses for places like Illinois and certainly the Rockford area, manufacturing. We have seen a decline of that over decades now. And yet, Rena, I know there is some work, you touched on this earlier, some work being done to try to train people to work and replace some of those manufacturing jobs. Basically, with it's in the aerospace industry you're looking at. Can you talk more about that program?
Sure. pardon me. So, as I mentioned at the outset, the Rockford area has this great center of excellence in aerospace and advanced manufacturing with some tier one companies and a large supply chain in the region. And as we looked at that as a great strength, we saw that a threat was an inadequate workforce, an inadequate workforce pipeline. So Northern Illinois University, the local community college, Rock Valley, got together with some industry leaders from Woodward, UTC, and some economic development and community leaders and said, what are we going to do about this? As we talked about it, we realized that some of the companies were having trouble recruiting people to come to the Rockford area, to come to the state of Illinois, and if they could recruit them, they wouldn't necessarily be able to retain them. And so we very quickly came to the conclusion that we need to grow our own workforce, our own engineering and high-tech workforce. So we came up with a plan to do what we now call NIU Engineering at RVC. And we're sitting in Rockford, which is about 45 minutes away from DeKalb, which is NIU's main campus. So we now have a program, and we're just starting our third year of a program where students in the Rockford area can go to their first 2 years for a mechanical engineering degree at Rock Valley College at community college prices. And the second 2 years, the third and fourth year, are taught by NIU faculty members from the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology on the campus of the community college here in Rockford. It is an industry integrated community-based program so that our students, while they're going to school here in Rockford, they don't have to go to DeKalb, are in internships. They're being paid very well as interns, and it's a smooth pathway right into a job. We just graduated our first group of students. All of them had job offers before they graduated at the places where they had interned. And we are growing exponentially. We're very proud of this program, and to me, it's a great example of how academia, industry, we have to work together to solve problems. And the higher education is really being pressed to be more creative and more collaborative, and we're looking for ways to do that.
The name of the forum is Seeking Solutions, and to me this sounds like one of those types of solutions. For years, it was all about, let's attract business. Oh, why doesn't business want to come here? If you can have a workforce ready and trained, it certainly helps a lot, or at least getting those people into jobs even in other places. I wanted to ask about something that has come up in a lot of surveys I've seen of business people and companies especially, and they say that there are jobs there, people just lack the skills or the training. So again, what we just talked about here, Dr. Bly, is that an accurate statement that the jobs are all there, people just have to get the right training?
I would agree. The jobs are there. And as I mentioned before, the jobs exist. But then the individual, if you don't have the skill and the employer can't find someone with the skills, then how do you come up with a training that will actually move someone into the position? So when you talk about the higher level being able to move into an engineering position, then that's someone who has stayed the course. But again, I go back to the model that I mentioned earlier about the earning and learning piece, and it's similar to what you said in terms of it's all got to be comprehensive. So it has to be working with the employer and coming up with a training plan that matches their needs. Because one of the things that we found when we try to put together and work with higher ed to develop an educational program, sometimes you have manufacturers that all have different needs. And so while we would like to think that we could put a whole group into one program, it doesn't always work that way. And so another model, and I think it's important to stress, too, that there has to be multiple models. It's not just one project is going to solve this. So it has to be multiple models. So the one that I mentioned earlier is about an immediate need when an employer has an open position, and then there's an individual who may be shy some of the skills that the opening it has. They may have the entry-level skills but not have as much of the technical skills, as we talked about, the technology piece, the math piece, and different things that the employer may be seeking. So how do we match them together so that that individual can start in that entry-level role and obtain those competencies along the way for the more advanced role that they've actually been looking to fill? And then now you can bring in another entry level. And so you're starting to create that pipeline. And I think that's another important piece where more work has to be done. And I know there's work being done at the high school and with the community colleges and the 4 years. And it's those kind of pipelines that are going to make all of the difference. But it has to be a comprehensive approach.
I would just jump in on that, too. We have to have lots of different pathways with on-ramps and off-ramps, right?
Exactly.
So one of our challenges is that sometimes we get a first-generation student who is going to be an engineer, and they're taking classes, and they're in an internship, and the interns are paid relatively well, and all of a sudden they're like, you know, that's far enough. I'll just stay here. This hourly wage is pretty good. And so we say to them, okay, well, maybe you can slow down and, you know, go part-time. Don't stop.
Right.
And, you know, so we can talk to them about long term. If a student, just because of their family situation or something like that, says, I can no longer pay this tuition, I have to work full-time, I've got the opportunity, you know, let's make hay while the sun shines, we have to be able to be flexible enough that when things change, we can welcome them back and they can continue. We have different modalities. You know, we have students who are taking an advanced manufacturing technology class online. So we've got people who've been working for 20 years and now they're doing something online where they can get their bachelor's degree. So, you know, again, we need to be creative and collaborative.
And so I wanted to add to that about the stackable credentials, too, because I think that's important, because the industry is always looking for the actual credential to know that you've obtained the competencies. And so the on and off ramps are really key to that. So I would agree with that point. So I wanted to mention the credentials, because that's the other thing that they want to have. So if they get off, we say, not everybody drops out, some people job out. So it's just a matter of what that person, what their lifestyle is, and what they're facing in their real life.
And Brian, if you want to weigh in as well.
One thing I would like to comment on your what you said a minute ago, Sean, about the interesting transition that has taken place, having been involved in the economic development field now for about 30 years. When I first started, the primary task was finding, working with local companies to create new jobs, or going out and finding companies that would bring new jobs in the community. Fast forward to now, most of the economic developers I know, it's flipped over to trying to find people to fill the jobs they already have. So instead of recruiting business, now it's recruiting people. And the other thing, you know, we were talking about manufacturers. The other thing I hear a lot of is, you know, the perceptual problem about going into manufacturing, that it's a dying field and so forth. And if you look at the net employment figures over the last few decades, yes, there are fewer people working in manufacturing now. But the caveat to that is that with the aging workforce we have, there's a tremendous number of openings to replace the people that are retiring. But the catch is, too, is that those replacement workers are going to need to know a whole lot more than the people they're replacing. It's not like 1960, where you could walk into a factory with a high school diploma or even without one and have the company train you to run a machine and you would be productive for the next 30 years. Because of automation, because of the complexity of the machinery and the processes now, it requires a far higher level of education. So, and of course, you know, working for a higher education institution, that's what we're trying to do, is trying to scramble to keep up with all of those changes that are going on right now. The other thing I would add, too, is, you know, there's a lot of focus on youth, but you have to consider that the generations following the baby boomers are a whole lot smaller. And so the competition for labor there is understandably very tight, and it will probably get worse before it gets better. So the other thing I think transition I think is going to have to take place next is trying to find a way, number one, to extend the working life of people past age 65 in some form or fashion, and the other one is also to be able to find better ways to repurpose people who are mid-career and find their jobs being phased out by automation or by something else, and help them find to transition better into other careers and do that smoothly. That's probably a more difficult task than taking somebody who's in the traditional 18 to 24-year-old age group and train them up.
And again, I think we want to hear from you tonight if you have some questions. We have a couple that we'll get to in a moment. I think back, I have a son who's in college right now, and you may have children or grandchildren, great-grandchildren even possibly, who are heading toward that point. I think you compared to maybe when I was that age, I look now and think, I'm trying to think 20, 30 years out. I'm trying to think, you know, don't go into this field because I don't know that there's a future in this field. I don't know if that's where you want to be. And maybe that's wrong, but that's how I'm trying to think. I don't want them to be a displaced worker at some point. What advice would you give young people these days who are trying to figure out what career they want to enter into? Any of you want to take that question?
Pretty difficult. I would say in the manufacturing area, it seems like the movement is more towards encouraging people to be multi-skilled. So don't just necessarily train to work as a CNC technician or in machinery maintenance or in something else like that, but try to pick up as great a variety of skills as you possibly can. Now, in some other professions, that's a little tricky. That may be a bit trickier. I mean, we're looking at automation impacting clear across the board as far as occupations, even some that people wouldn't normally think of, like accountants and surgeons and so forth. The automation that is coming into those industries is probably going to displace a few of those people. Some of them are probably going to be mid-career, and they're going to have to figure out how to repurpose what they have to take advantage of the jobs that are being created now or will be over the next couple of decades. But the biggest obstacle is that the pace of technology now is so rapid.
I completely agree with the concept of multiple skills development. And you know, I remember people saying, you know, I'm not a math person or I'm not an English person. And, you know, we can't let students say that anymore. Everybody's got to, you know, have math. Everybody's got to be able to write. Everybody's got to be able to do critical thinking. And we hear that a lot from K-12 teachers and in higher ed. But it's really serious. And I think most importantly is the mindset of lifelong learning. So we can't allow people to think like, okay, I'm going to go here. I'm going to punch this thing. I'm walking away with my certificate or I'm walking away with my bachelor's degree in XYZ. And that's it. I'm set. You know, that mindset is not going to work. In 10 years or so, you know, if something changes, you have to be able to shift and be resilient. You know, I was watching Frontline the other night. They had this great episode about artificial intelligence. Even roles that you think you're safe, you know, attorneys, 20% of stuff that attorneys do, artificial intelligence is not going to be able to do in the next few years. So, you know, these changes are happening so quick that we're going to all have to be able to be very flexible, resilient, and have the mindset that we're always going to be learning.
So I would add to that the flexibility, the being adaptable, and you've got to be a lifelong learner. That just goes without saying with the technology moving at the pace that it's moving at. And so I would say whatever industry you go in, you have to have a problem-solving mindset. So you have to constantly learn the industry, whatever the industry is, and understand the problems that the industry is faced with, and think about the solutions that face that industry. And so I think whatever industry it is, because we want, at some level, we want our children to do what, you know, what they're passionate about and what they love. But whatever it is, be mindful about the technology and think about the issues and the problems that the industry face and coming up and creating innovative solutions.
We are in Rockford tonight. It's our NPR Illinois Forum Series Election 2018, Seeking Solutions. And we are here at the Northern Illinois University Rockford campus. I'm Sean Crawford. And our panel this evening includes Brian Harker, who is with the Center for Governmental Studies at Northern Illinois University. Also, Rena Kachonis. She is also at Northern Illinois University and Associate Vice President of Outreach, Engagement, and Regional Development. And we have Dr. Lisa Bly. She is Executive Director of the Workforce Connection here in Rockford. We did have some questions from people in the audience, and if I only have a last name for Moore, and if that person wouldn't mind stepping up and to the microphone over here and asking their question, we'll give you a moment to get up there. And again, we do appreciate everybody coming out. And if you have not filled out a card, if you'd like to ask a question, we have some in the back. Just ask for one, and we'd be glad to listen to what you have to say this evening. Go ahead, sir.
A bunch of figures were thrown out early this evening. Some very intimidating about pensions and education in the state of Illinois and how far in debt we are. Is there a window at the end of the tunnel?
I don't know if anybody on the panel wants to ask. I can give you my point of view from Springfield, but if anybody else wants to weigh in on that, I think they'll be willing to take a pass on that one. But, solving the problems, I think, are... Some of these problems are so overwhelming, I think you're right. The pension problem for the state of Illinois, which has been an underfunded problem for so long, they have tried a few different ways to solve that or at least to curb the costs. And so far, I don't know that they've had much success. The courts have blocked some of those changes. Now, I'm in Springfield, so people in Springfield tend to look at the pension situation differently because a lot of state workers. I work for a university, as do other folks here. I know that at least I am a member of the state university retirement system. So, again, those issues do impact us. As far as pensions, like I said, I think it will continue to be something they're going to have to look at because the amount is so so great. Education's a little different story. They did pass some legislation that starts to put some money towards schools that are, I guess, the haves and the have-nots. The have-nots will get a little bit more money under this plan, but it is incremental, and it will take a long time for that to really pay off. Again, I don't know if anybody wants to talk about education and the state's situation with it.
I wish I had a magic answer for the fiscal situation. The only thing I can say is that we're not the only state that has to deal with it. There's a number of other states that are also in situations that are probably bad or worse than us. There's no one answer to it. I must be honest about it and say it concerns me because it will also be an economic headwind for the state and for this area. But the best we can do at the local level is, you know, try to influence where we can and try to control the things at the local level we can control, and that will be trying to continue to deliver good services at a reasonable price with the resources that we have. But even so, it's still going to be a long, hard slog, as the Brits say.
And when it comes to education, and I don't want to try to do a comparison with Rockford or other neighboring communities necessarily, but you are so close to the Wisconsin border. Is that playing a role in any way as far as attracting companies, attracting people to the area? Do they think, hey, I'll just go to Wisconsin. Maybe it's better there. Maybe it's not. I don't know. Any thoughts on that you've seen?
Well, people tend to follow jobs. So certainly, Wisconsin has, being a border area, and this has been true not just recently but long term, you know, they have picked off companies that were in northern Illinois, and, you know, the other surrounding states like Indiana have done the same thing. And the people tend to follow jobs. So obviously if the employer leaves, there's a, you know, some pretty strong pressure on the employee to go with. That's always occurred. It's probably a little more concerned now than it has been in the past. But even so, there are a lot of companies that have stayed here and some that have grown, and it's because it still makes economic sense for those companies to be here. A lot of it has to do with the skills of the labor market. Companies still look at a number of things when they're choosing a location. Access to markets, access to suppliers, and increasingly the biggest one being access to certain types of skilled labor.
Let's stay on that topic. I have a card here, but it doesn't have a name, so I'm just going to ask the question. And it talks about higher education. It says the bachelor's degree seems to be the new high school degree. I think most of us can agree on that. Do more jobs need to accept the four-year degree, or should we encourage graduate school? So, again, this gets back to what we were just talking about with students going in. Should they be prepared for graduate school? Is that something that's, you know, to getting people to that level, is that going to help the situation?
So there are quite a few jobs that I refer to as middle skill jobs where you can earn good wages. And so some of those require a certificate or credential. It just, again, it depends on the industry and what the requirement is of the industry. As you pointed out about the engineering positions, well, those require more advanced degrees. But when you get into some of the manufacturing, for the most part, they're looking for, and again, not at the engineering level, they're looking for some industry credentials. So it just depends on the industry, and that's what I would say to that. When we look at the jobs that got added in the Rockford MSA, they were in manufacturing, they were in warehousing, transportation, utilities, hospitality, and leisure. So again, in thinking about those were the jobs that got added, the question then becomes what credentials are required to work and earn livable wages as a career in those industries.
So I guess, and feel free to weigh in anybody on this, but there's a debate going on right now of whether college education is needed for everybody, whether vocational training, you know, go to trade school. How do you view that debate, any of you that would like to talk about that?
So can I start? I want to give a plug in terms of the community college. So I started at the community college and went on and pursued advanced degrees. But again, I'll say every individual is different. The skills that they possess are different. And so I think there was a time when there was this dream that everybody should go to college. But I think what we've learned is that there are opportunities for those that may be more technically inclined. I dare not even go into the IT opportunities where individuals drop out of college. So that's another sector to look at in terms of industry credentials and how far a person can go on their career pathway. But I think it's just, I'll just say, I think it depends on the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think it's a shame, actually, that people kind of have this mindset that, oh, gosh, if you don't have a bachelor's degree, if you don't have a master's degree, that, you know, there are very few options available to you. When we say to students, hey, you've got to go to college, we should say it a little bit differently. What we mean is you need some kind of a credential. You need to have some training in something else. And, I would much rather see a student who's technically oriented go to a community college and have a specific kind of training and do something that they would really enjoy and be good at and be successful at, then go and get, I shouldn't be saying this because I work for a four-year institution, but go and get a very general degree that they have a student loan and, they walk away with I've got my bachelor's degree. What are they going to do with it now? I'm not even going to say a discipline because I'll have, sociologists or somebody mad at me, but, some kind of credential, some kind of educational element beyond high school. Yes, you absolutely need it. And it depends on what your interests are and what your industry is. And, I would always say that, more education is better, but that's not always the case. It depends on what you want to do and where your opportunities are, getting to Brian's earlier point.
Yeah, I can probably take a speculation here and say that, we'll probably see in the future some new types of hybrid degrees that we haven't even thought of yet. Probably 20 or 30 years ago, nobody would have thought of having a program set up as we do between the College of Engineering and Rock Valley. a partnership to train new engineers. That simply wasn't thought of. The idea was that the two-year community college was a vocational institution, and that was it. Also, because of the way the nature of jobs are changing, I think the credentials are going to keep maybe getting moved around and put together in different combinations. You may see something, people who are operating machines or production lines may have to have credentialing that is somewhat higher than an engineering technician, but maybe a little less than somebody with a four-year engineering degree. And that may be coupled with, CNC programming or CAD/CAM or something like that. So I can see those, those types of degrees being made up. Now, what type of institution handles it? Well, it may be one institution, it may be several.
You made me think about the different competency models with training and even in education now, so that it's kind of like you are learning at your pace, and it's when you master a skill, then you move on to the next skill. And so there are different levels that once you master this, you move on to the next. And so there are competency models, too. So I agree. I think the way people earn their skills is going to continue to evolve. I really do.
We have another question, and this person didn't want to ask it at the microphone, so I'll ask it for them. But they say that changing the image of Rockford also impacts attracting and retaining a workforce here, and that Rockford is doing a good job but needs to communicate more with Chicago and other areas to basically say this is a good place to work and live. So I guess, does Rockford have an image problem, a communication problem? Do you see that? Any of you that would want to weigh in on that?
Well, I certainly agree. Quality of life in the community is a very important factor for companies deciding to stay or to be able to attract them. Where are the employees going to live? What kind of environment do they have? And, younger adults now, they decide where they want to live, and then they'll get a job when they get there, as opposed to, hey, where's the job going to take me? So it's a totally different mindset. I think we've seen over the past few years some change organizations like Transform Rockford and others. There is, sometimes some skepticism about these kinds of things because, we've been working on that issue for years and here comes another group that's trying. But we have to keep trying to do something to make the changes that we need. So we look around and we see low educational attainment. We see some poverty in parts of our community. We see problems that we need to fix. And, I think that we're not going to see any changes in those things unless we try to work together on a local basis and, look at the assets that we have, the resources that we have, the people that we have, to try and solve our own problems. We do not win by, hoping that somebody's going to come in on the white horse and save us. It doesn't work that way. So I want to always be optimistic about any change initiatives that are underway to look at problems that we have, see what we can do to solve them. I agree with Brian that I think I've been in this area for a long time. I do see more of an effort for people to come together and really try some things. And they're not always going to be successful, but, we can't stop trying.
I agree. And again, going back, having been a resident here for 25 years and seeing what the community was like when I came here in 1994, image-wise, attitude-wise, it's far better now than I saw it then. I can remember coming here in the late December of 93 to interview for a job and coming through and seeing, a lot of the gateways to the city didn't look all that hot. The downtown area was in pretty rough shape. And beside that, just going around sitting in restaurants and going to movies and other public places and in the mall, the people's people's attitudes here were pretty foul, quite frankly. I don't get a lot of that, nearly as much of that anymore. It's interesting because I listened to all that and I came here anyway, probably because I was coming from a community that had all of those problems, and I'd already been dealing with them for a few years, and I was able to see beneath that to see what the potential was. And I saw a lot of potential in this area, in this community. And so I would much prefer to have the Rockford of 2018 than I would to have the Rockford of 1994.
Can you, and whether Brian or Rena, either one, you both have been here for a while, can you point out a turning point for the city or for the area from what Brian just talked about, what he saw when he first got here? Has it just been a gradual thing? Was there something more specific that occurred?
I would say it's probably been a more gradual thing, but I would say certainly in probably the last 15 years with the growth of the aerospace industry here that has really taken off. Of course, we have an auto industry that's doing well, although it's gone through some hard times. But, I would say I can't really point to one particular event. I will say I was, as a former downtown resident and somebody who was a board member of the River District Association for a few years, when I moved down there, it was starting to change and it was starting to get better. When I left there last year, it was 100 times better than what I had found. Today, you have a part of town where people actually want to come to, and there's activities going on all the time, versus when I came here in 94 and I drove through downtown and found mostly empty storefronts and very few people and not much activity, and a lot of what I did see was probably nefarious. So.
I think there was definitely that very intentional focus by the previous mayoral administration on downtown, and I do think that it's much improved. I was just there last night, and, it's lively. There are people around on a Friday night. You know, Rockford City Market is great, and, you don't do community development by event, but the fact that these events are happening, and on a Friday night, there's this huge buzz downtown, and there, you know, if there's something at the Coronado, there's something at the... it's not Metro Center anymore.
BMO
Harris.
BMO Harris.
There are things going on. There's just a feeling like, okay, I'm part of something that's lively, that's successful. And, I think also the anchor institutions, you know, the hospitals, you see what Swedish American Hospital did with the area around there where, they really said, we want to continue to be here. We want to develop our campus. But we're also going to buy these houses. We're going to help them be renovated. We're going to try and incentivize our medical staff and our nursing staff to live in these homes. So they're actually intentionally working on making the neighborhood surrounding them better. And I think that you're seeing more and more of that. When Woodward decided to make their expansion here a few years ago, which is wonderful, they were very specific about ensuring that they were making a park-like campus so that everything around them looks nice. And so those kinds of efforts, I think we really need to make sure that we are recognizing the fact that those organizations are going those extra steps and, you know, encourage them and support them.
We've also been talking about financial problems for the state of Illinois, and we're talking about workforce training tonight. A lot of times that takes money, grants and different programs that are out there. Have we seen problems because of the state's financial dilemmas, the dilemma that the state is in, the budget impasse that took a couple of years to finally resolve? Has that impeded workforce training in this area in any way?
For us, it has not impacted our funding. Actually, out of 22 local workforce areas, we were one of two that actually got an increase for training. So that's been one of the reasons why we've been spending a lot of time working with employers. So actually, based on the formula that they use the formula of unemployment and poverty, and then we ended up getting additional funds. So it has allowed us to do more than we did before. So it actually worked out for us.
Are you seeing more people coming in from the retail industry needing retraining? Because we've certainly seen the layoffs and the closures of places like Sears and many other stores that are out there. At one time, retail staples that had been around for decades, no longer here. People who had sort of banked a career in those jobs probably looking for something else these days. Are you seeing a lot of retraining from that?
We have not. I think, again, because those individuals that may have had transferable skills, they were able to pick up and move someplace else and move on with another employer. So I haven't seen a heavy dislocated population from retail We're certainly aware of those closings, but we didn't have an influx of dislocated workers.
And Brian or Rena, either one, what's the impact of this whole shift in retail on local communities like Rockford?
Well, you know, on one level, it's an impact on the real estate market now of trying to reuse a lot of these empty box stores. I don't know that it's become quite the issue here that it has some other places, but I did want to add to one thing about, you know, what was happening to retail workers and how they're being repurposed. I can tell you I've talked to at least one manufacturer out down there in the Quad Cities who was telling me that that was one place where he was finding workers was hiring them out of the local Home Depot and Lowe's, because he was looking for people that had at least some interest in tools and machinery and probably had some manual skills.
And in some cases might have been underemployed, like we talked
and
about earlier.
And underemployed.
Earlier this month, the Register Star had an article I was reading that talked about how this region and the state, pretty much in general, lagging the nation when it comes to black unemployment. In fact, unemployment among blacks twice as high as that of whites in this area. Any idea, anything that's being done about that or trying to be worked on to improve that situation here, and any ideas you might have that could help the situation? And any of you that would like to weigh in on that?
So I'll reference our target population numbers. And when we look at the individuals that came to get service from us, it was the blacks were comparable to the whites that got service from us. We actually had a question more about Asian. So that was an interesting question that got raised from the equal opportunity officer. Again, I think it goes back to skills, and I think in some ethnic groups or demographics, it just depends on the educational attainment, and it depends on the skills that individuals have acquired. So that's what I'll say about that.
And I know a lot of higher ed institutions are trying to address this problem as well. Rena, is that happening at Northern?
Absolutely. We have a huge focus on encouraging diverse students and, you know, providing support along the way. And this idea of pathways is very important for that. So, you know, I reference this NIU engineering at RVC. We are going further and further back into, you know, is it sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, you know, freshman year of high school, so that we want all students to see a potential pathway for themselves. And, you know, we have a lot of first-generation students at NIU. So we want students early on, when they can still kind of make those decisions about powering through the math classes that are you know, beginning to get hard, and, you know, doing some very specific things to encourage women, other, you know, underrepresented minorities in engineering and high tech, so that they can see a path for themselves, so that, you know, work hard and, you know, we're going to support you, we're going to mentor you, we're going to provide tutoring for all students, so that by the time they get to Rock Valley College, they've got the math, they've got the confidence, and they see something ahead that is, hey, we've got companies here that want to hire me. And so, you know, those are the kinds of things that we're really working on for this program and for others at NIU.
And Brian, any thoughts on the black unemployment rate? This is not just a problem, of course, in Rockford. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much everywhere.
Not specifically, but I will say, you know, that was one problem that we've had to work on here in Rockford, is that we do have some populations that have had chronic unemployment problems. A lot of it has to do with, you know, not enough education, or people have had to drop out of the system for various reasons. People, you know, it may be location too, and transportation issues of being able to get the jobs, particularly if they come from a disadvantaged background to begin with. So it's not a problem that's just happened, but it's one that we have to continue to work on.
We may have time for one more question, and again, I just have a last name of Mesley. If that person wouldn't mind stepping up to the microphone, and they've got a question here. We've got about 5 minutes or so, and if we can get the question and the answer in. And Brian might be the person to answer this one. Mm-hmm. Mr. Mesley, whenever you're ready.
Yes, if I could also make two quick comments.
Sure.
I'm a retired school psychologist. I'm 72 years old. I'm still working because there is a great shortage of people in that profession. And I've been retired 8 years. I've worked every year since then. I'm hoping to maybe quit when I'm 75. The other thing is jobs and people. A couple of friends who are business owners say that they need a workforce that's going to show up on time, and I see that in the schools with kids being constantly tardy and missing days. My original question I put on was, we've had a lot of talk and current talk about the casino, that we're in like a casino race. Wisconsin's going to build one. We need to build ours first. My question is, and it's maybe a little bit of a moral one, where is all the money going to come from that people are going to spend at those casinos? Because usually it comes from somebody who doesn't have a lot of money to discretionary income, you know, to spend on something like that. So something's going to have to be cut somewhere along the line to feed that habit, that gambling compulsion, which is fed by our cell phones. And they do have the American Psychiatric Association has put together that there's now a digital gaming category as a addiction.
Brian, if you have a chance, just the casino especially, I know we run out of time here before all of this discussed, but your thoughts on that as far as that's something I know Rockford has discussed before.
Yeah, that's been a perennial issue that's come up here and a lot of other communities too. I guess I'll just go out and say as a private, and this is not this is my own private personal opinion as an economic developer. I was never terribly excited about casinos just because I felt there was, you know, weighing the costs and the benefits that I could probably go out and recruit industries that had better jobs and better income. I do understand the arguments that are being made about revenue and so forth. And also, you know, prior to moving here, my first economic development job was in Iowa, where we went through a number of things in the community I was in as far as attracting gambling. First, it was bringing in dog tracks. Well, the dog track ran pretty hard for about 5 years until one of the Indian tribes built a casino an hour south of us, and that pretty much killed off the dog racing thing in Waterloo. And, in fact, when they started licensing riverboats and everything, it killed off the rest of them, too. I was, from that experience, I wasn't terribly excited about going after those things. And the other thing is, too, is that in terms of the casino, yes, people are going to gamble regardless, but you do reach a saturation point fairly quickly, I think, because you still only have a limited amount of people that are, A, going to gamble, and B, are a set number of dollars, usually, that people are going to spend. So you can wind up with situations like I found in Iowa where you have one form of gambling or one casino basically coming in and killing off other ones. So you reach a point of saturation and diminishing returns very quickly in some cases.
All right. Well,
I don't know if that answered the question.
I appreciate that, and also thanks for asking that question. We're going to have to leave it there tonight. We're about out of time. So, again, I want to thank the panel. We've had Brian Harger, who's with the Center for Governmental Studies at Northern Illinois University, also Rena Kachonis, who is an Associate Vice President at NIU, and Dr. Lisa Bly, Executive Director of the Workforce Connection. If you could give them a hand. And thanks again for everyone who came out tonight and also for those who have been listening on air. It's been another of our NPR Illinois forums for election 2018, Seeking Solutions. We'll be traveling around the state this year. We're addressing different topics. Our next stop is on August 30th in Carbondale. We hope you can attend or at least tune into that. I'm Sean Crawford with NPR Illinois and WNIJ, and support for the series provided by AARP. Have a good night.
This is WGLT Normal, a service of Illinois State University's School of Communication. When you hear it on air, know that you can find more online at WGLT.org. Find the articles, photos, and even bonus content available only at our website. Hear interviews with elected and community leaders and those making news by making a difference. Keep up on Bloomington Normal News and Bloomington Normal's public media at WGLT.org.